So on behalf of CELTS, a very warm welcome to all of you. This is the third lunchtime lecture of this term. And we're very pleased and honored to have Professor Wolf Sauter here today. He is an advisor to the Dutch Healthcare Authority and a professor of healthcare regulation at Tilburg University and a senior fellow in the Law and Economics Center at Tilburg University, a leading center for law and economics research. He's going to talk to us about proportionality. And I think we all have a notion what proportionality means, but if we asked different people, I think we would come up with very different answers. So I'm quite pleased personally that Professor Sauter is going to shed some light on this very difficult question. Welcome, Wolf.
Thank you, Chairman. Good afternoon. It's an honor and a pleasure to be here today. As just mentioned, I'm going to be speaking about proportionality in EU law, and that's subtitled A Balancing Act. It may have to be a balancing act for myself as well, because it's not really my core competence. My background is more in competition law, electronic communications, more recently over the past years, healthcare liberalization, and services of general economic interest. So this is a sort of out of area mission for me, and I hope I manage to pull it off somehow. Let's go. Why proportionality? And perhaps initially a few remarks on what proportionality is. Proportionality is a test for the judicial review of public acts, and it's about the balancing of competing principles and or rights. Now, there are different views on this, but this as a very general initial definition might just suffice. Proportionality has spread worldwide as part of a trend after the Second World War as a reaction against totalitarianism. It was found to be important that there should be checks and balances on governmental acts. So it's part of any modern system of constitutional review of public acts. It's also a key principle of EU law. According to some, it is the key principle of EU law in the constitutional sense. And it has emerged in the EU as part of the constitutionalization process, with which I assume you are familiar, but that we're going to get back to in a minute as well. The principle has been derived from national law, the law of the member states, into European law. And many of the theories regarding proportionality are based on national law as well, and for that reason perhaps fit less well with EU practice. Robert Alexey is a famous theorist on proportionality, and to him, balancing is the key element of this principle, and balancing is precisely what we often don't get at, in the community context. So we'll get back to that as well. As I mentioned, this is not my typical topic, so the question then might be, why did I pick it up in the first place? This is because of my frustration with the principle as I came across it over the years. Its application appeared to be almost completely unpredictable, and that different tests were applied at different times, and it was difficult to tell why they were different. And also, there appeared to be a proliferation of standards. It wasn't clear how many standards exactly there were, and it seemed to be added to them. At the same, somewhat later, Lee Hunter and I tried to write a paper about establishment in healthcare, freedom of establishment in healthcare, and we had hoped that this freedom of establishment would work as a mechanism to create leverage and thereby market access and more liberalization on the healthcare front. And in many cases, it turned out this didn't work because of the way the proportionality principle was applied. So this accounts for my frustration. And that was the motive to pick up a paper on this topic, which paper I thought was going to be circulated before this session, when I handed it in last week, but I've heard meanwhile that it's a different practice and that it will be made available after the session. And you can then either download it from SSRN or from the site of CELTS. The original objectives of this paper were to understand the application of the principle in a broad sense, and secondly, to propose a structured test. Now, I remember that when about half a year ago I was asked to give this paper, I produced a summary where I promised I was going to come up with a structured test. Now, that I'm afraid has failed. The results so far are mixed. What I tried to do is identify features that make proportionality more predictable and understandable. I think that part has worked, but I'm no longer sure of my ability to offer much advice on how to improve on practice. So there won't be any structured tests emanating from me today. Just a brief look at the research questions on the approach. The questions are relatively straightforward. The first is, how is proportionality defined and applied in EU law? And the second is, can its particular features perhaps be explained by the integration context? So that's very general. There are three levels of analysis, or really two and a half. The first is the union level, then the level of the member states, where we're mainly looking at exceptions to the movement provisions. And then finally, the competition policy context, which looks at undertakings. It's not so common to look at proportionality in competition law. I've tried to devote more attention to it in the paper here. I'm just going to make a passing reference to it, because I need that reference in order to be able to draw my conclusions. And then there are conclusions at the end. The origins of proportionality at EU level can be traced back to the Internationale Handelsgesellschaft case in 1970, which is a common agricultural policy case, and it's about an EU system for the cereals trade that was based on export licenses and deposits. Now, this in turn led to a legal conflict at national level in Germany, and the national court then sent a reference for a preliminary ruling to the Court of Justice. This was quite an aggressive challenge in some ways, and that was because the German court felt very strongly about what was going on. What it said was that the EU system was contrary to German constitutional principles of economic freedom and proportionality, and then it asked whether these fundamental rights under national law are also recognized in the EU. And the implication was that if they were recognized, then the EU system should be judged to be disproportionate. And if not, if they were not recognized in EU law, it then said there would be a conflict between the German basic law and the supremacy of EU law. So this question, or in the guise of a question, we had a real challenge to the legitimacy of the European legal order and the constitutionalization dimension of that. The court responded in a measured way and said that indeed fundamental rights were recognized as general principles of EU law. It repeated itself here, but it said it very clearly, and then applied an implicit proportionality test to the EU measures concerned. What it looked at was the necessity and appropriateness of the measures that were tested, and it applied a least restrictive means test. So that is to say, you don't use a hammer to swat a fly, so there has to be a reasonable relationship between the measure that you apply and the objective that you are pursuing. And here it looked at systems of declarations as opposed to export licenses, or systems of ex post fines as compared to fines, and it found that although those could serve some purpose, they wouldn't be equally effective. And that is, of course, one way in which such cases are regularly resolved. The more restrictive measure also turns out to be more effective, and that then becomes an argument why it is acceptable. And the court also looked at something that looks like balancing, which is quite rare. At EU level, it said that the costs of the system were not disproportionate to the value of the traded good. Now, that's not quite balancing, but it's something that looks a lot like it. So to sum this up, we see that the proportionality test balances, on the one hand, respect for fundamental rights, with, on the other hand, the claim of supremacy of EU law and the demands of integration are served by this approach. And I think we can say that it forms a significant step in the constitutionalization process. We now go to another case at EU level, which is a case in which proportionality is defined in four neat steps that are rarely used in a cumulative way, as they are presented here, but it is a nice overview. This case, again, concerned the common agricultural policy, and therefore involved a measure of EU discretion. The case concerned a complete prohibition of using hormonal substances in livestock farming, with the objective of restoring consumer confidence in the sector. In this case, the court defined four cumulative conditions for proportionality, which looks a lot like a structured test and could be considered to be the EU standard model. In the first place, the measure has to be in pursuit of a legitimate objective. Secondly, the measure has to be appropriate. That is to say, it has to be capable of achieving the goal pursued. It has to be the least restrictive means that we've just come across. So there's a choice between different measures. You have to select the measure that is effective and least restrictive. And finally, there's balancing, which, according to the theorists like Robert Alexey mentioned before, would be strict proportionality. So that's the only part that you could consider proportionality if you were very strict in your views. And in this case, what is applied in this balancing context is a non-manifestly disproportionate test. So the test applied in this specific case was first the least restrictive means test. An information approach was rejected, that is to say, it was tested to see whether labeling of hormonal substances could have been sufficient, and that was rejected as insufficiently effective. And the fourth condition, the fact that the measure was only checked to see whether it was manifestly disproportionate, so whether the cost of the measure were manifestly disproportionate in relation to their effects, their desired effects, that meant that the EU measure was cleared. In practice, however, what we see is that generally the third and the fourth conditions are not cumulative but alternative. So what we have here is four conditions, which looks like a very nice summary of a structured proportionality test. And what happens generally is that only the third or only the fourth test is applied. Either the third or the fourth test is applied, not both, as you might expect. And what this means is that the manifestly disproportionate test tends to prevail if there's room for EU discretion. So as soon as there is EU discretion, as in this case, in the context of the common agricultural policy, the manifestly disproportionate test is applied, and that then promotes integration. And this is a theme that we're going to be coming back to again and again, but this is the first instance of it. So proportionality, the way proportionality is applied at EU level, in my view, promotes integration. EU measures failing the proportionality test are relatively rare. And this is given the manifestly disproportionate test and the limited use of the least restrictive means test at EU level, with a net effect of promoting integration. But that isn't the end of the story. There's also a constraint, and that is that individual rights can play the role of a trump in the proportionality context. An example of this is the Cadi case, which regarded a council regulation in the context of the common foreign and security policy. Here, the council was implementing a UN resolution in the context of the war against terror, and it implemented the freezing of assets of terrorism suspects and people linked to them. And this was appealed against by one of the people whose assets were frozen. And the Court of Justice here held that interference in individual property rights would be allowed unless it was an intolerable and disproportionate interference that denied their very essence, and that a fair balance had to be struck between the public interest and that of the individual. But at the same time, there would be a wide margin of appreciation in favor of the public authorities, and this meant that freezing of assets such as had occurred here was in principle allowed. However, in this case, the individual was denied the opportunity to state his case before the authorities as part of the process. So that looks like a procedural guarantee that was violated. But that, in this case, was linked to the right to property, and the regulation was annulled on proportionality grounds. So what you see is that there is a relatively relaxed regime with regard to measures taken at community level. At the same time, there seems to be indications, this is not the only one, of cases where individual rights then subsequently can trump in a proportionality context. And I want to switch to the level of the member states. After that, I'm going to have one slide dedicated to competition law and then conclusions. The origins of proportionality at the member states level also can be traced quite a way back, in this case to the Cassis-Dijon case, which as you well know is about the minimum alcohol content of spirits in Germany, where somewhat strangely, the German position was that the higher the percentage of alcohol, the less likelihood of tolerance to occur, and therefore less alcoholism. And on this basis, they tried to keep out French spirits with a lower alcoholic content. In this case, the court took up four positions that are relevant to our discussion today. In the first place, it introduced the principle of mutual recognition of product requirements, which means that when a product is lawfully marketed in one member state, it has market access elsewhere. And this meant, obviously, expanding the scope of the internal market, and later on became one of the mechanisms that fueled the internal market initiative. And as I believe happens quite often in EU law, if you see a broadening of the scope of EU law on the one hand, you also see new exceptions opening up on the other hand. So simultaneously, new exceptions were opened up under what is called the rule of reason. And this is to say, member state could state overriding reasons of public interest, which is an open-ended category, so they can make up new ones as they go along. And these have to have a legitimate objective, have to be non-discriminatory, and have to be necessary. And necessary is our cue word here, because necessity is means there will be least restrictive means testing as part of the proportionality principle, as we've just seen. Excuse me. Finally, in this case, also the information approach came to the fore, because the question was asked whether labeling could not be an equally effective way of pursuing public health in Germany as banning spirits. And I'm not sure how happy we'd be with this approach today, but it has happened quite often in EU law that labeling is used as an alternative to other forms of regulation in the light of behavioral economics. I'm not so sure we'd still be convinced today that it's always valid, but at least in this case it was considered to be the case. How did the application of the proportionality principle develop at member states level, starting from here? And in particular, what is the role of the integration variable? For this, I want to look first at the definition of proportionality at member states level. In this context, the Gebhardt case is relevant on the freedom of establishment. Gebhardt was a German lawyer practicing in Italy, out of practice mainly consisting of advising Italian citizens on German law and German citizens on Italian law with very little litigation. But he did use the title of avvocato without having registered with the Milan Bar, which was the court district where he was practicing. Now, there might be a lot to say about this case in terms of mutual recognition of professional qualifications and the like, but we're not going to go into that at all. We'll just look at the four requirements for proportional justification that were defined here. So if you wanted to justify such a registration requirement, what are the requirements that you have to meet in order to do that? In the first place, restrictions must be applied in a non-discriminatory manner. Secondly, they must be justified by imperative requirements in the general interest. They have to be suitable for attaining the objective pursued, and they may not go beyond what is necessary. So what we don't see here is the word proportionality, and certainly not balancing, but we do see least restrictive means testing in the necessary or necessity condition. There are other aspects that are interesting, because this case allows you to challenge even non-discriminatory regulation, and it has led people to debate whether this is now a market access test that is capable of challenging all types of regulation and therefore promotes integration. Now, what I think is that what we see in practice is that the application of least restrictive means testing is frequently much less strict than it appears, and we'll get around to that in a minute. But what I also think we see here again is an expansion of the scope of EU law combined with a milder standard for member states' exceptions that we're about to discuss. This is this milder test is the mitigation of the least restrictive means test, or of its impact at the level of the member states. Now, least restrictive means appears to be a strict pro-integration standard that's imposed on member states, but in the absence of harmonization, preemption, common policies, or other forms of centralization, the member states remain largely competent to establish the preferred level of protection, and the least restrictive means test is mitigated in several ways. In the first place, there's no reading across jurisdictions. So each national system is judged based on its own merits. So you can't really draw on arguments that other member states have different systems that maybe are more liberal or have more market access. Those types of arguments are not taken into consideration. An example would be the Omega case concerning the German right of human dignity and violent computer or laser game, combat simulation games, 2004. A second dimension is the fact that there can be no hypothetical alternatives. That is to say, you have to look at what alternatives are available on the book under the existing laws, and you cannot claim that hypothetical, more effective or efficient laws would be possible that would allow you to take a different decision. And here, the Italian motorcycle trailers case with a complete ban on such trailers in relation to a road safety objective is illustrative. And finally, the least restrictive means test is sometimes replaced by necessity in a very different form. Necessity then takes the form that there has to be a coherent and consistent policy, which is a very low threshold. And here, an example which goes the other way is the Dermastatica case, where there was an Italian prohibition on broadcast advertising of medical treatment as far as national broadcasting was concerned, but not regional broadcasting. And here it was held that, in principle, this would have been fine, but since the policy was inconsistent, it was struck down. But generally, it goes the other way, and all kinds of strange restrictions are felt to be part of coherent and consistent policies. Again, we therefore see a relatively relaxed application of the proportionality standard, in spite of what you would expect given the use of the least restrictive means test in many cases. But what you also see is that there is room for the protection of individual rights even in this context. The Watts case is an example of that. This concerned a case of a British citizen who went to France for medical treatment because she had been unable to get treated within a reasonable period of time in the UK or in England under the NHS. And this case is interesting in several ways. In the first place, the UK contested that EU law applied here at all, but the court held that it did. So healthcare came within the scope of EU law. At the same time, new exceptions were permitted. So the healthcare planning exception was permitted, but as that was the second dimension. But thirdly, it turned out that there was an individual dimension that was taken into account, because the court also held that objective non-discriminatory criteria for waiting lists should exist. Now, it would seem that any reasonable government policy ought to have non-discriminatory and objective criteria for such an important thing as waiting lists for healthcare, but apparently they didn't exist before. And this ought to include an assessment of the circumstances of the individual case, including the degree of pain and discomfort. And in other cases, the court has also held that, for example, employment status would be a relevant variable as well. So what we see here is that the health is brought within the scope of EU law. At the same time, new exceptions are opened up, but individual rights can play a trump role. I will just look very briefly at proportionality tests for undertakings. I've only selected two aspects. So not looking at state aid or service of general economic interest, but just at the cartel dominance abuse and merger control provisions. And the cartel provision, there is the rule of inherent restrictions, where if you have legitimate objectives, you may remain outside the scope, provided that the restrictions are both legitimate and necessary. This is a rule that hasn't been applied very often yet, but can be found, for example, in the Mecca Medina case concerning anti-doping rules. And more important for our discussion are the efficiency defenses that exist in the context of the cartel prohibition, as well as abusive dominance and merger control. And here it is held that the benefits of any restriction should be the result of the measure. They should be specific to the measure and are indispensable, which is the least restrictive means test. It should be verifiable, substantial enough to have set negative effects without its balancing. And finally, a reasonable share should accrue to the consumer. And there, I don't really think there is an equivalent outside the competition context, but maybe I'm wrong. So this appears to be a lot more specific than the test in the internal market context. And we also see that undertakings are subject to strict balancing, contrary to what is the case for the EU level or the member states. So this is quite a contrast. I haven't been able to work it out fully in the paper either, but it is something that I'm interested in working on, this contrast. So now I'll conclude in two slides. Proportionality emerged to allow the testing of EU law against fundamental rights, and thereby to salvage supremacy from national law challenges in the context of constitutionalization of the EU legal order. So I think the constitutional dimension is relevant. The proportionality test is now widely used in the EU, but the standards that are applied to the different levels, the EU level, the member state level, and to undertakings, differ considerably. The EU is generally held to the manifestly disproportionate standard. The member states are subject to least restrictive means testing, and strangely enough, only undertakings appear to be subject to genuine balancing. Balancing at EU and member state level is rare. It does sometimes occur. But the fact that it's rare is a loss from a theoretical and a legitimacy perspective. Also, what appears to be the case is that in the EU, the test is not consistently stricter where there is a greater breach of an interest or principle. Now, I'm not going to make too much of this point because it's based more on the paper than on the presentation, but this is one of the things that is quite central to the theorists of proportionality who believe that the test should become more stricter when more strict when a greater breach is involved. But in the EU instead, the degree of integration seems to determine how strict the test is rather than the degree of breach of an interest. This can be explained by the integration bias and by exceptions that are based on the degree of centralization at EU level. So this is why the application of proportionality in the EU resembles a balancing act. Giving priority to EU competencies in the context of judicial review promotes integration, and so does applying the strict least restrictive means test where it is applied to the member states, but this is balanced with deference for exceptions. And finally, individual rights serve as trumps to correct inequitable outcomes. So you've got a system that seems to be in a precarious balance. So proportionality serves to promote both integration and individual rights. In this context, strict balancing between principles is perhaps necessarily rare. And instead, we see the tests or tests applied as a compromise between full application of the proportionality principle and what is possible in the integration context. So if this analysis is broadly correct, the question becomes, how will proportionality develop in the EU? Will there be more emphasis on the constitutional dimension as it develops and on individual rights and citizenship? Are there practical lessons that we can learn from the competition policy context, such as using economic arguments and quantification? And perhaps there are other suggestions as well. With that, I want to conclude.
Yes. Thank you very much, Will.